Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up, it's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's July 26, 2013. You're listening to the best poker cast on the planet. I'm a very sick Chris Cosenza.
And I'm a always healthy Scott Long.
All right, we got a little clarification here to make. Let's make it.
Hi, guys. Octagonal. Really? Octagonal? You both said it. It's octagonal. I just had to call you out on it. This is Rita from Cincinnati. I love the podcast. I listen to it while I'm at work. You guys are great. Thanks for doing it. And also, I really enjoyed Chris's book. Catch you this weekend when I catch the next podcast.
You know, people just get so picky about these words, you know?
How are they shocked that we've made up a word? That's all we ever do on this show.
Regional diction. So, I am quite certain there's a very small pocket of Ohio that says octagonal. Perfectly acceptable there.
I've got two excuses. One, I was sick, probably. The beginnings of this cold that I have now. And two, I've never actually had the opportunity to use the word octagonal. So I didn't know that it even existed, I think. I think my entire life I've never actually said the word octagonal before. I don't even watch the UFC. I mean, really. How could I possibly know that that's a word? So thanks for the correction. Much appreciated. Don't know where I'm going to go from here with it. I think I'm going to try to use the word in everyday life now. Octagonal. Never even heard of it.
Oh, man. You know, sometimes I think our listeners get cantankerous.
Or cantankerous.
Yes. But no, very good call. I always like when folks correct us on stuff. And it reminds me that really what I need is a vacation to clear my head, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, next week we're going to be down at the Ante Up Poker Tour World Championship at the Hard Rock Punta Cana in the Dominican Republic, hurricane notwithstanding. And the good thing about this resort is it's all-inclusive. That means all the booze is included, including top-shelf stuff. So my head is going to be completely clear by the time I get back. So don't you worry. There will be no octagonals for at least 2 weeks.
And I'll be probably experimenting with the spirits so that I can lose this cold somehow because I'm tired of getting sick from my family. But
it was quite possible that I'll be on the floor of my suite in a octagonal position some nights, so.
I've heard of spooning, but now Chris and Scott are going to attempt to octagonalize each other on the show next week. Speaking of that, we are going to be gone from Sunday to Sunday. Now, technically, that means our streak will end in the sense that we won't be actually recording the show, but we're going to attempt to record the show there and upload it to our website that while we're there.
And so, then, see, technically, you were incorrect there, because the show will have been recorded in the allowable time.
So now, when we introduce the show, we'll say, you're listening to the longest-running recorded-on-time show on the internet, but we won't say posted and broadcast in the allotted time. It's a long intro there. I don't know. But we are going to attempt to put it on Scott's computer, edit it, and upload it to the website, but since the feed is based on my home computer, we're going to probably have to upload the feed on Monday. So if you really are just craving the show, jonesing for a little Scott manipulation of the English language and drunkenness, be sure to listen to it on our player on our website at anteupmagazine.com.
Yeah, and I'll even probably post it on Facebook and Twitter for all you lazy folks out there.
Yeah.
All the rest of you that wait for it to... all you lemmings out there that wait for your little iPod to say, hey, a new show.
Not going to happen until Monday at some point, yeah.
And then we have plenty more vacations planned, because I really realize how many words I mess up, right? So the more I can clear my head, the better it is. So somehow, and I still really honestly do not know how I did this, I talked you into doing 5 cruises next year.
Yeah.
And I should clarify, I talked you into allowing Auntie up to do 5 cruises next year. How many of you would actually grace the captain's presence with?
Yeah, after 5 years of working with you, my backbone is just completely withered away. I don't even know if I have one anymore. I'm like a big bowl of jelly here.
Just, I got a big chunk of it right here on my desk I'm looking at.
As long as it doesn't directly affect me sometimes, I'm just like, all right, let's just do it. Because I know I'm not going on half of these cruises, so...
In all seriousness, I think we are very excited for our 2014 Antioch Poker Cruise schedule. Really is the best one we've done yet. Really hits a lot of areas and takes care of a lot of the requests that we've had from people over the years. And so I just remind everyone to go to antiochcruises.com. We have all the details in your schedules. A bunch of other stuff on there as well, too. Also, the phone number for Chris's great wife, Jeannie, who handles over bookings and her emails, so you can get booked for all these great cruises. So all the details are there. We're not going to blather on too long here, but we'll run down the 5 that we have coming up next year. Plus, we got 2 more this year. So that's 7 cruises that we have that you just can't wait to anticipate, Chris.
And the other thing, too, is that, like you said, people have been asking us to do certain things with these cruises, like, be on the West Coast or do it when the kids are off. And okay, well, now we're doing that. So I expect these to be record-breaking cruises next year.
That's right.
We've had so many people complain about those particular things that we've actually come through for you. So don't let us regret it. Please come on out and hang out with me and Scott, or Scott without me or whatever. But one of us
you
will
asked. We listened. New book.
Because you asked for it.
That's going to be our new motto. All right, so let's run through them fairly quickly. And like I said, go back to antiochcruises.com for more details on it. But obviously our next one coming up is October 20th. Everybody knows about that one. Out of New York City, going to Bermuda. And just remember that that will be our inaugural Antioch Team Championship. So the winning 4-player team is going to be on the cover of the December issue of Antioch. So that should be very exciting. Our first open-faced Chinese poker shootout tournament is going to be on that cruise. And our good friend Lee Childs is going to be on there doing, I believe, 17 total hours of poker training. What more can we do to get people on this ship? Do we actually have to go to your house and pick you up and drag you there?
Because we're willing to do that. Because you asked for it.
And you can also win your way there at Dover Downs and win Dover Nugget. And the most important thing about this cruise right now is that our published rates are only good through August 12th. And right now we are recording on July 25th. So that means you have, about 2 weeks?
About 2.5 weeks.
To lock in those rates after that. Who knows? It could be very expensive. So if you're on the Vine, get off the Vine and book for that great cruise, right?
On the Vine, or is it on the fence? I've never heard of it on the Vine.
It could be on the Vine, too. Or the Vine's on the fence.
There you go. If you're on the Vine, it's on the fence. Get off
the Vine.
Now
you're just getting too particular. Then. You don't know where the Vine is. Leave me alone. You'll be on the fence.
Oh, man. A big cruise, I think, is going to be really big, is our December 2nd one from Tampa to the Western Caribbean, though. We got a ton of bookings already. Great value. And it's December, and we have bookings, so...
Yeah.
And just like the last one, you can win your way on Dover Downs, but you can also win your way in a league at Jackson Ranchera. You can win at Presque Isle Downs in Pennsylvania. And Texas Hold'em Poker Tours right here in Florida. So a lot of ways you can actually win your way on board. But really, it's going to be one of those really fun cruises. Right in our backyard, no stress, no nothing. Just a great way to get there, great way to have fun, and lots of players and lots of mixed games, I'm imagining.
And then the next one, of course, is going to be our biggest adventure yet. Our first one ever out of the West Coast. We've got nothing but, people saying, hey, you got to sail out of the West Coast. Do one out of L.A. I'm there. We're doing one out of L.A. This one leaves from Los Angeles. It's going to make 3 stops in the Mexican Riviera. It's going to be our first time on NCL Cruise Line very few cruise ships actually go out of Los Angeles. And so that's going to be very exciting for all of our West Coast listeners that want to go. And NCL really wants you to go. They're going to give every stateroom a free bottle of wine. And if you're like Chris, it's sparkling wine. If you're like me, it's the house wine. So either way, you win.
It's me, it's ginger ale.
And that will be March 30th again, so get booking on that one as well.
And then a next huge adventure, only to be topped here, is the May 4th Transatlantic. We are actually going from Fort Lauderdale to Southampton. It's only $849 per person, which is roughly the same price as flying. So hopefully some of our UK and European listeners who are always asking about what we could do with them, here you go, here's something. You can join us and take that trip. It's a long one, too. It's a long cruise all the way across the Atlantic.
13 nights, but of course, you know, all of our UK and European people have all those great holiday hours, you know. Here in America, we work people to death, so they're all cranky and ugly Americans. Everywhere else, they give you a sufficient amount of vacation time to be happy, cheerful, productive members of society.
That's right.
So,
that's right.
So you guys have the time to fly over to the U.S., hang out at the theme parks, and then sail back with us. But no, that's going to be quite an adventure. A lot of tournaments on that one as well, too, and 13 nights. And like I said, $849. You can't beat that price for 13 days at a cruise ship.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And then, of course, some of our most successful cruises have been the ones out of the Orlando, Port Canaveral area. And so, you know, I constantly getting requests over the years. Like, hey, I really want to go on these Polka cruises, Scott, but I got kids. I'm not going to drag them out of school. Can you do one in the summer? And I always say, you know what? It's going to be really expensive in the summer. That's why we don't do it. And finally, you know what? All right. We'll see if people will do it. So, not that it's terribly expensive. It's just a little bit more expensive than we normally do at Port Canaveral. But it is in the middle of summer, July 28th. So you don't have to take the kids out of the school. In fact, actually, what I would think would be perfect is come a few days early, stay a few days late or one or the other, go to the Orlando theme parks, go take the kids to see the rat. And then in the middle of it, you got a great poker cruise with plenty of kids' activities on board. So they're still going to be having fun, but you're going to be playing poker for 4 nights. So,
basically a year from this week.
Exactly.
So you got plenty of time to plan it, plenty of time to save up, and plenty of time to prepare the kids. So very good, very exciting. Another first for us, October 19th, out of the Houston, Galveston, Texas area, going to the Western Caribbean. It's our first time sailing out of Texas, and also our first time going to Honduras and Belize as an Antioch cruise. I've been to the Belize one. It was pretty nice when I went with the family, and really enjoyed myself on the tour there. So lots of stuff to do, and a lot of firsts for us. Very exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. And then our final cruise in 2014 will be December 6th. Again, that's the Tampa to Western Caribbean, which is going to be a staple, I think, for going forward because it's just easy for us and it's cheap. It's going to be a great value. That's going to be our big value cruise for 2014. If bookings or anything like what we have coming up for this cruise out of Tampa, they're going to be strong as well, too, so plenty of action. So we'd like to see you on one or all of these cruises coming up. And again, go to antiupcruises.com for a lot more details.
Very good. All right,
I got this. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry.
I was going to say, we got this letter from our listener, Todd Falstad, and he had an interesting question. He said that he wanted to play in 1-2 PLO, but there were two stacks at the table that he was going to join that had $2,500 in them. So that means it had five times the max buy-in. He's curious what he should do. Should he buy in for the minimum, the maximum, or not even play with these guys, just walk away? And I mean, I'll let you answer if you want, but I just thought about something very specific about this.
No, go ahead. Absolutely.
Well, one of the things that's great about PLO is that the pre-flop betting generally doesn't get out of hand. So when you're in no limit hold'em and these guys want to raise and they have $2,500 in front of them, they can literally put your whole stack in there as the initial raise, and then you're
true.
Just like, what am I going to do here?
Yeah.
And that's when you say to yourself, do I really want to sit down with these guys because I can only sit down with $200 and they have $5,000 in front of them. That's the point when you're like, all right, these guys are playing wild, I'm going to walk away. And that's perfectly sound reasoning. But in this case, that $2,500 doesn't really affect you, because by the time that they can get enough money into that pot, you're going to make the decision whether or not you're going to play for your whole stack anyway. So first, I would not walk away from this table. That's just to answer that part of it. I would not walk away, because there are perimeters in this game. There are standard bettings that you just limit the amount they can get in the middle for you. So that's one thing. Also, most people, if you're comfortable in playing 1-2 PLO, if you're absolutely comfortable in the game itself, then I would always buy in for the maximum, because I want to win the maximum from these guys who can obviously cover my stack.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you're not comfortable, then you might want to buy in for the minimum until you can get used to it. So I think all three of these scenarios really have been addressed. I think the minimum is fine as long as you're comfortable with, not if you're not comfortable with the game, maximum is what you'd want to be doing for strategic purposes and for to maximize your gain. And then don't walk away, because really it's not no limit hold'em. They can only race so much before the flop, and it shouldn't make you uncomfortable at that level.
Excellent points all around. Very good.
Thank you.
The one thing that Todd wrote as I went back and forth with him on this was that you're right. There is a cap, essentially a cap pre-flop. You know, right. Somebody can't just shove all the way in. Obviously, if they can pot and repot and repot, next thing you know, the whole stack's in. But assuming your initial raise, obviously, is going to be very limited. But what he was saying, because one thing I suggested is, buy in for the minimum. It's not terrific to do that, but in this kind of game, you know, it's going to force you to tighten up, so you're not going to splash around with some crappy hands. It's only $2 or $3 a round in blinds, right? Mm. So you've got some time to wait for a pretty good hand. And then, you get that hand, you get it in, which you're probably going to do anyhow, and you may, with this kind of action, double, triple, maybe even quadruple up, and then you do that twice, and you're really in the game at that point. Do it once, and you're pretty competitive. So one of the things that he said, the problem with that is like there wasn't a hand that wasn't at least $25 pre-flop. That people were just coming in automatically raising and re-raising. So that makes it a little difficult, because if you're buying in for, I assume the minimum at this table is probably 100, and it's $25 to see a flop, that means you get to see four flops before you're broke. And probably less than that, because that second one, we put $25 in, you're not going to fold for another $25. It wouldn't take, you only have that much left. So the minimum is probably a difficult way of playing this. But, you know, the other issue that I thought was interesting, this is, I think, why Todd initially emailed us, is this something that poker room managers need to be addressing? And I know some do already. Some do allow you to buy in for the maximum stack, mm-hmm. the table, whether it's no limit hold'em or particularly in pot limit. And that does take care of this situation, so you don't feel like you're playing short stack with guys that are just going to be able to, you know, raise you and make you play for your stack every single hand. The flip side of that, and probably why more rooms don't do it, is, you know, PLO is a dangerous game anyhow. Mm-hmm. And then if you're allowing, you know, somebody else to sit down with 2,500, now that game is massive, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, you got, if there's other two people with 2,500, you buy them for 2,500. That's 7,500 just from three people at the table. Mm. You know, it's probably 10 grand on that table for a 1-2 game. I mean, how many times have you sat down a 1-2 no limit hold'em and had 10 grand on the table?
Yeah, and that also would intimidate a lot of other people who are there just to learn the game, and that's the cheapest that they can learn it for is 1-2. Yeah. And they're going to sit down with three guys who have $7,500 cumulative. That's just not right. I mean, it's tough. I mean, that's the other thing, too, is when I go to play poker, I'll bring, like, three bullets with me. So yeah. If it's max I can buy in is 200, I'm bringing 600. Then all of a sudden they say, oh, you could buy up. I still only have 600 on me anyway. I'm not going to bring $2,500 with me to go play 1-2. It's just not going to happen. Yeah, so even having that amount of money on me is not going to happen. So very difficult situation.
And if you brought bullets, which is really the way to play PLO, I think. I am certainly no expert at PLO, but I think it's a game with so much, you know, variance in there that you want to keep those bullets in your pocket. You don't want to put your whole roll on the table right away, because you're going to get a, you know, ace-ace-king-king double-suited situation that's not going to win.
Yeah.
You're going to get it all in, and then you're busted for the day, whereas if you only had one of your bullets in, you did that, and you get incredibly unlucky, which you would in that situation, and then you pull out another bullet and then try again.
You know, it's weird that, I mean, I know you didn't put it on the show notes, but he told you, it's weird that every hand was $25 pre-flop. I mean, that would have to be someone potting it and then potting it again. Essentially,
yeah.
Right?
And that's, if you get two people at 2,500, that's easy to do.
Yeah, no, but they have to wake up with a hand every time to do it, or at least playable.
I don't think you have to. I think at that point, they probably won. They're probably gamblers to begin with. They really get 2,500. Yeah. They might be really good, too, but I mean, I'm sure they got some gamble in them. And at that point, I mean, why not? I mean, you're really going to make people... this is the power of stacks in poker, is making people very uncomfortable. And it's one of the reasons that PLO is great for that, because, I mean, just what you said before about how, you know, these players can't get their whole stack in pre-flop, that also works to their favor. You know, they don't have to commit their entire stack to bully you.
Yeah.
Take a chance on it. They can, well, we're going to make this game play like it's a 5-10 game.
Right.
Or 10-20 game, and it's going to make it very difficult. People are, we know because we're raising and re-raise, or pot and repot, that for people to come in at that point with very short stacks, they're going to have monster hands. And now we've defined their hand.
Okay, well, then one more piece of advice, I think. One more piece of advice is, if you can, sit to the left of them.
That's true.
That's the only other thing. I mean, other than when you're in the blinds and they're in position, you're going to have position on them the rest of the way. And so if they go pot, one guy folds, the other guy goes pot, now you can control it. You can just call the $6 or whatever it is, instead of it worrying that it's going to be potted again when it gets to the other guy or whatever. So sitting to their left of them is a lot better than sitting on their right, and then you call the $2 or call the $6 and then watch it go 25, you know, 80 or something. So if it's possible, wait for the seat that opens up on their left. If that's a thing, I'm assuming that these guys aren't, they don't have to be next to each other, but if there's a way that you can be on the left of both of them, that'd be a good idea.
You can always do the first seat change as well, too. And,
yeah, that too. So
move over there.
Good point. A lot of interesting ways to handle this situation. And if it really is $25, pretty much every hand, then and you don't think that's, that's 8% of your stack, or a 20% of your stack. I mean, so if you're gonna, if you're buying for 200, so or what is it, 10% of your stack? So I mean, that's pretty decent. I mean, that's still not that bad, 10% of your stack if you're buying for 200. But I don't think the minimum buy-in now is realistic. If that is the case, or it's $25 preflop, minimum is just not going
to
work. Yeah, of
course. Yeah, I mean, you'd have to sit there and watch the game to realize what's going on there before you did that, before you knew. So
yeah,
but if you buy it for the minimum, you can always add on at that point.
That's true. That's true.
To the max. So, all right. Well, each week we spotlight a listener who called our hotline at 813-448-1120, or emailed us at podcast@antiettmagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call the Floor and Hand of the Week, we send them something fantastic. This week's sponsor is TournamentButton.com, which offers a variety of home dealer buttons with timers built right into them. You can even customize them with your own photo or logo. Ask about the Anti-Up logo version and use code ANTIUP for free shipping. And this comes from Doug from Connecticut, up in near your little nutmeg factory up there. And I'll go ahead and read this because I will have some terrible advice, but you're going to have better advice.
All right, go ahead.
Doug from the Nutmeg Factory. I am a fairly new listener and look forward to your podcast every week. We'll take care of that eventually. I enjoy what you guys have to say, and it helps me to improve my game. We'll definitely take care of that. I am a 1-2 cash game player. I cash probably 80% of the time, leaving the table up anywhere from $100 to $1,000 at any time. When I have a losing session, I lose maybe $100 before leaving the tables. I've been wanting to try 2-5, but I was trying to figure out if I am ready. Do you have any tips and a guide of when you might want to try a higher limit game?
All right. Well, here's the deal. For me, first of all, the guide is just your mind. Do you think that you're ready and you've been wanting to try this? Clearly, you're making money just about every time you sit down at the 1-2.
Pretty good money, too, huh?
And you're making good money. So for me, as a person who likes to play the game recreationally, if I'm going to make money every single time I sit down and enjoy myself, I'm not moving. I'm staying at 1-2 and just watching my role grow. I have no reason to leave it. But if you want to make more money, because you can only make so much at 1-2, but if you're looking to make more money and you're looking to challenge yourself, you're clearly dominating this 1-2 game. Yeah. So it is time. It's time to move up. Just be prepared that if you start to lose, one, you can always go back. There's no shame in that. Every single poker player on the planet who plays cash games has done that before, where they've gone up, realized it's too good for them, if it is too good for them, and have gone down, or has struggled at that level and gone down to get their money back and then gone back up to the higher level with the new education that they have. So, one, I would say that you definitely are ready. The fact that you're crushing the other game all the time is the first indication. Two, you want to do it. So you definitely should try this, because you don't know. You could be crushing that too and making anywhere between $300 and $3,000 now, or whatever. So that's another thing. But as far as tips, You know, I have zero tips for you as far as Scott might have something, but as far as moving up like that, you know, obviously I think the standard stuff is to be tight to see how people play first, because your methodology of beating the 1-2 may not translate to 2-5. It may be a totally different environment that what succeeds for you at 1-2 won't succeed here. So I would stay tight and watch the game while I'm playing and see if it would work. And then if my strategy doesn't work, or if I don't foresee it working, then I would either get out of the game and formulate, or I would try it while I was playing, but try not to lose too much of that role. But really, I think you definitely are ready. Anybody who wins 80% of the time when they play at a certain level, they're ready to move up because it's clearly too simple for them and they need to try something a little more challenging.
Wow. I have very little to add to that. Very good job.
Thanks.
The only thing I'll add is that it's a difficult question to answer because 1-2 and 2-5 are so different wherever you are.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's some places where the 2-5 plays very similar to the 1-2, and there's other places where the 2-5 is a completely different game. So that's the other tough thing. But you're right. I mean, obviously, he's cashing a tremendous amount of time, doing very well. He's limiting his losses when he plays. You know, really, the only reason, then, I think, for him to stick at 1-2 is just because it's so easy. It's like an ATM. But he's obviously going to get bored at it pretty much pretty soon because he's already asking about it. So, you know, bump up. And if it turns out a 2-5 is just as easy as 1-2, you made a tremendous decision. And if it's a little harder, always move back down to 1-2.
Yeah, I mean, it's really simple. It's pretty simple. I mean, the fact that you're making money every time you play 1-2, it's always going to be there for you. That game is ubiquitous. It's not going to go anywhere. So the fact that even if you lost money playing 2-5, you can recoup it pretty quickly considering how well you're playing in 1-2. If that's indeed what's going on, that you're winning between $100 and $1,000 every time you play just about, just go try 2-5. And if it doesn't work out, go back. And if it does work out, there you go. And then eventually you'll try 5-10. So that's how you work your way up. You got to experiment and see if your system is truly universal, if the way you play just works on all levels or not. Otherwise, if it doesn't, you always have your 1-2 to go back to.
All right, well, it's time for Call the Floor. When you find yourself in a situation in your favorite poker room or home game and not sure what the proper ruling should have been, email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com, and we'll have our veteran poker room manager, Jody Russell, now at the El Dorado in Reno, by the way.
Yep.
Tell you how he would have ruled. And this week comes from our great contributor every week, Malcolm O'Malley. And this is what he has to say. It was a 1-2 no limit hold'em home game, and there was a new player in the game. He kept showing his cards, trying to get a reaction from players in the hand. This is something that has never come up in the home game, so after the first time he did it, we had some discussion and decided since most cash games allow the showing of cards in the hand, we would allow it. So his player kept doing this, and then an interesting situation happened. The board read Ace 4, Trey, Jack 9, no flush possible. This player was under the gun and checked. The middle position player bet, and the button raised. The gun began to huff and puff and think for a while before flipping up queen-queen. The middle position player mucked his cards and said, "I can't beat that." The button said, "Me neither," but kept his cards. The other gun player laughed and said, "I never folded, I call." The button then calmly turned over ace-jack for two pair, beating the queens. There was an eruption of discussion at the table in which the under the gun said the pot belonged to him because the button had folded. We talked for quite a while and decided the button never did anything to indicate he had made a decision to fold, verbally or otherwise, not to mention the action was still technically on the under the gun, even though his hand may have been deemed dead because of his physical actions. It was decided the button would be awarded the pot. The under gun said at the very least the button's action was an unethical angle shoot. Was the button angle shooting?
All right, here's what Jody says. Home games can definitely be more loose about rules and procedures. Generally, in cash games that allow a player to show cards during the play of a hand, it is restricted to heads-up play. The great thing about poker is you can make your own rules in a home game. The trick is to make them agreeable to most of your players and keep the rulings consistent. In this particular situation, it is my opinion that both players had live cards. They were tabled face up and with no conflict concerning who they belonged to. They didn't mix or touch with the other cards, creating doubt. push the pot to the best hand, tell the queen-queen to stop showing his hand when there is more than one player in the pot with him, and tell the player who folded before the queens bet not to do that. I couldn't agree more with this. When you were reading to me that there was three people in the hand, I thought, you're not supposed to show your hand with three people.
Right.
Because that's not right. Okay. Heads up is one thing, you're trying to get a reaction, but now you've got two players that you're trying to... And it just hurts the other player, and that's different. You know, it'd be one thing if you're trying to get something off of one person, but now you're hurting another person, you possibly are, by doing it that way. So, one, I totally agree with this little heads up. And two, the guy never said I fold. He said I can't beat it. That's hilarious to me.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but if you're the idiot showing your queens like that, and you're going to talk about angle, saying he's doing an unethical angle shoot, you're showing your cards to two players at once.
That's what I thought was kind of funny about it is, there is a debate to have, because I don't know what the home game rule is here, that maybe the queen guy wasn't being unethical by house rules, but regardless of whether it was or not, then to turn around and call somebody else angle shooting, you gotta know, hey, this is probably, I'm probably culpable to some degree in this situation.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's my fault, but when I know I'm culpable in some way, I'm gonna be a little careful about slinging that rock at my, from my glass house,
Hello, pot? Yeah, you're black. that doesn't make any sense. Oh my God. So, the other thing too, and it's funny because when you read this, you think about how much time these guys wasted and argued when they could have dealt like 10 more hands.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And this is the kind of stuff that you're in a home game to have fun and be, whatever, and to make some money or to jibe your friends or whatever. Whatever it is that, you want to give them some, ribbing or whatever. But for the most part, we're there to play cards and not argue about trivial stuff like flipping up queen-queen and who's angle shooting and discussing the rules. And it's a home game. Say ahead of a time, this is what we're going to do in the home game, and then we all understand it. And then after that, those are the rules, and that's what we live by, and let's play some cards, man. Like KGB
would really,
say.
I'm really convinced that a lot of home game problems come down to this. The fact that players can't separate the having fun playing poker part of the game with the appropriate time to have fun playing poker part of the game.
Yeah.
In other words, I think, and we've been doing our home game for quite a while with the same players for quite a while as well, too, so we've kind of gotten into a rhythm now, so I hate to put our game up against other games, but I really get the sense in our game that people know when to have fun in our game. I mean, we have a blast when we play, right?
Yeah.
But it is, I think we're all respectful of when that time is to have fun. So, the hand's over. We jabbered each other about the hand, whether somebody played it badly or not. We talk about, what the Smokey and the Bandit that's on the TV or whatever. But when we're in a hand, we're not trying to have fun beating each other, I think. And I think that's kind of really this case, I think the guy was just trying to have fun. He was like, showing his queens he's just having a good time with the guys, but the problem is it's the wrong time to be having a good time with the guys.
Yeah.
Just play the normal hand, and when it's over, then you can, trash talk all you want. But, get through the hand, and then have your yucks. And I think that's all. It would solve 75-80% of the most of the problems in the home games.
And the fact that the guy said that I can't beat it either, that's just typical home game jabber. I mean, how many times have we played where the other player is trying to put you on a hand and saying hands out loud, and then the player who's in the hand with you says, I don't have that hand. And they're saying it because they don't have that hand. And so they're trying to make you call because you ruled that hand out, and then, of course, you have this hand that's even better than that hand, and then they call and they're like, oh, or whatever. I mean, it's the nature of the game. If you're going to play games and fool around, then everyone else has the exact same obligation, and there's nothing unethical about what he did. He said that, he's just telling you, hey, I can't beat it either, but I didn't fold, and it's your turn to act anyway. What I do after you act is what counts, just play poker. God, some of these people, they just think they're on TV.
Well, again, it's that separation, and then that's the problem, I think. You could be, hey, we're just getting together having fun tonight, and, I think you just got to occasionally remind folks that, we are here to have fun.
Yeah.
We don't need to have the maximum amount of fun, the maximum amount of time. Everything's cool.
Well, from one O'Malley's move to another, we got a brand new O'Malley's move in the hopper. Going to refresh our memory here with part one. No, we're not gonna refresh our memory. We're gonna learn what's going on. Hey, I'm sick. All right, cut me some slack here. I don't want to hear any audio clips next week about how I'm, you know, predicting the future or something.
Yeah, such an octagonal mind right now.
Here we go.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we are seated at a $1, $2, no-limit hold'em cash game. It's been a typical 1-2 game. Some maniacs, some solid players, and some rookies. We sit with 175, down about 25. The action is folded around to a solid MP who limps. We get one more call from the cutoff and are in the big blind with the king of spades, six of diamonds. Not a great hand, but it's our option, so we check. The solid MP has us outchipped. He sits with about 300. The flop comes down, the six of clubs, four of diamonds, deuce of clubs. This is a decent flop for our hand. We've got top pair. Unfortunately, we're first to act. With about $7 in the pot, we make it $4 to go. The MP raises us to 15, and the cutoff folds. We toss in a call, with a set or a flush draw firmly in the back of our minds. There's roughly $35 in the pot, and the turn is the king of diamonds. This card brings mixed emotions with it. If we were way behind, we may have just walked right into a trap. If we're ahead of, say, a flush draw, we've got to protect it. The only problem is, how do we know what to do? We decide to bet this card, and make a $20 stab at the pot. Our opponent raises us to $60. What's the move here?
Hey, this is AJ Benzi.
This is Justin Bonomo.
This is Downtown Chad Brown.
Hi, this is Clooney Gowan.
This is Daniel Negreanu.
Hey, this is David Singer.
This is Linda Johnson.
Hi, this is Greg Reamer.
Hi, this is Hoyt Corkins.
Hi, this is Cindy Violet.
Hi, this is John D'Agostino.
This is Joe Seabach.
This is Jennifer Harmon.
Yeah, this is Johnny Chan.
This is Cowboy Kenna James.
Hi, this is Mark Safe.
This is Paul Wapika.
Hi, this is Miami Johnson.
This is Dora Brunson, and you're listening to Annie Up.
It's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast@antiupmagazine.com. This week's sponsor is J-Design Playing Cards, official playing cards of Antiup. Check out J-Design's great cards and more in the Antiup store at antiupmagazine.com/shop. And we have another situation this week.
All right.
Comes from a new listener, Nick, in Lincoln, California, which our very astute listeners will know is the home of Thunder Valley Casino Resort, one of our favorite Antiup partners. And, in fact, actually, that's when he said he got introduced to Antiup when I came to town for the Antiup NorCal Classic last year. And he did very well in that event, made some very nice money. Since then, he says, I've been a huge fan of your poker cast. 1, 2, 3, 4 exclamation points, Chris. It's been quite a while since we got 4 exclamation points.
Whenever they add more than one, you know they're serious.
And he goes on to gush with us and says it really is the best around. He never misses an episode now, but occasionally he'll go back and listen to older episodes. Why not?
Of course. Yes.
And he said, an episode I was listening to yesterday reminded me of a hand, and I thought I would run it by you to see if I handled it correctly. He said, to recap, the hand that you had brought up on the previous show was in a home league where they were playing for a seat in the World Series of Poker. One player checked the flop when it was heads up, and a player verbally bets 6,000, but then says, no, wait, I mean 600. The first player has ace-king on a low rag board, and you discussed what to do. You said fold, which I agree in this scenario, although in the end, ace-king was way ahead against king-six. So my hand is completely different, but I did have a scenario where the other player obviously made a mistake, and my decision was to whether to punish the player for this mistake or not. I think in poker that you are supposed to always be getting chips however you can within the rules of the game. Obviously, no colluding or cheating. I think my decision was easier as there was not a huge bet for significant chips on the line. It was during a tournament series at the Atlantis Casino in Reno, Nevada. I believe it was a $550 no-limit hold'em event. I checked a missed flop multi-way in first position. The flop was King, Deuce, 5. The woman directly to my left makes a decent-sized bet. It folds all the way around to me. Before I have a second to muck my trash hand, she flips her hand over, showing pocket jacks. She had thought everyone had folded and wanted to show her pretty hand. I guess that's why you should never flip over unless a dealer asks you to. The floor is called over and quickly rules action is on me, and I can play as normal and do anything I like. Which he says, by the way, I believe was the correct ruling. I think for a second, as I'm in an unusual spot of knowing what exactly my opponent's whole cards are. I desire to raise a significant amount, but not crazy. She quickly folds and says, well, of course you have a king. I happily raked in a decent-sized pot with complete air. Did I play it correctly? And anything wrong with my play there?
I'm going to say first that I've been burned doing this exact thing before. I've actually had that happen where somebody showed an inferior hand and I bet a bunch that they called me anyway. And I had a show crap. So I'm not saying it always works because I'm a proof that it doesn't always work. Pretty slick on Nick's part here. I think that that's within the rules of the game. He didn't do anything wrong. And you have to know your player, I think, to make this play happen. There could be somebody who doesn't even see the king on the board. You don't even know, you know what I mean? or put that in their minds, or they could think that you're doing exactly what you're doing. If they're a really good player, they might do that too. So there is some risk here. I think it's less likely you're going to get the call, but it's happened to me. So it does happen. It's just whether or not how you pull it off. I think if it looks sincere and it looks like you're clearly ahead. And the other thing, too, is some people might actually step outside and look at this and go, all right, well, why is he betting if he knows he has me beat when he could just keep milking me because I have to bet out first the rest of the way? Is it because he's really trying to avoid a two-outer? You know, why wouldn't he just call? So some people might actually look at that, the way you did that, and be like, there's no way he has a king here, because if he had a king, he might want to walk the dog here. So yeah. I don't know. I don't know if I would have had the chutzpah to do that. I really don't.
Well, here's the thing. The problem with that, and you're right, you got to figure out whether the player is going to be thinking that back to you. If you don't bet here, if you just call, you take away any opportunity to win this hand, right?
Right, I guess.
I mean, I guess you could bet out on the next street or something like that, but I guess I shouldn't say you're taking away any opportunity. I mean, you can play with the next card's coming. You know, if it's a queen or an ace or something, you can represent that as well, too. But I think it's going to be kind of curious if you just call here, isn't it?
I think so. I mean, as the person trying to perpetrate this play, you're thinking that. On the other hand, if you do have a king, would you just call? I probably would if I had a king. So, you know, you could wake up at any time then and bet it because you're representing the king and you're walking the dog. But, you know, you could raise on the river or bet on the river, you know, or something too to say, okay, now I'm going to get the money from you because I know you only have jacks. So I don't know. I think that there, for every scenario we come up with, I think you can come up with the other scenario saying this is why it would work. Maybe. I don't know. But do I think you were doing anything wrong? No, I don't think you're doing anything wrong. If that were the case, then every single person would show their hand before the last hand was shown and then say, oh, you can't beat us, you can't bet. You know, I mean, you can do whatever you want. If you want to risk your chips for this, you know, higher risk situation, by all means, it's up to you. And then when she folds, you took advantage of the information that you knew. You know, poker is a game of incomplete information and trying to complete it. And in this case, you got a big piece of that puzzle, and you felt like the jacks were vulnerable to that overcard, so you could represent. You know, it's called a bluff. That's all it is. You know, just because you know the cards doesn't mean you weren't bluffing, you know, or you were bluffing, because you were bluffing. You knew you didn't have the best hand. You've done that before, where you knew you couldn't possibly have the best hand. You've raised knowing that this person's probably weak. What's the difference by knowing the jacks? To me, it's not anything. Nothing unethical here. I think it's just ballsy.
Yeah, and I kind of want to talk about that a little bit more, because not only is nothing about that unethical, I think. This is kind of, I'm not trying to turn this into a political discussion or not, but this is kind of my problem with a lot of discussions in our world now, is that people don't believe that they should have consequences for making bad choices. And, you know, I'm not trying to punish this poor woman and make her feel worse than she already is, but let's be honest, if you make a mistake, there should be consequences for it. I mean, there is the, you know, hey, you run a red light. Oh, I'm really sorry. I didn't mean to. I was busy. I feel terrible about it. I totally believe all that, right? But still, you know, you violated the law. There should be a consequence, and there's going to be a ticket for running the red light, right?
Right.
I think what Nick did here was essentially give this woman a ticket and just to reinforce to her that, you know, you made a mistake, there's consequences for it, and you're going to lose this hand now because you made this mistake. And I guarantee you, I shouldn't guarantee you, but it's going to be very much less likely that she's going to do this again. You know, she's going to think twice about flipping over her cards in the future. So, you know, you do have to accept some responsibility for your decision. Now, does that mean if someone out there listening right now says, oh my gosh, God, you're such a jerk, why can't you just fold and let her have this, that I disagree with them? Absolutely not. And that's a personal decision. But I don't think this woman can be upset if even if you did this and flipped your trash over, which I wouldn't recommend, but even if you did that, I don't think she has a case to really be upset. She has to understand that she made a mistake and just not make it again. And when you do make a mistake, somebody's going to take advantage of you.
And I'm going to add to that, because what she did in this situation by not paying attention and being cordial to everyone at the table, she's taken away Nick's opportunity to play his hand this controversy now. And that's not fair to him. So she wasn't being fair to him. So in turn, by him betting now, is sort of the equalizer here. Okay, well, you didn't give me my chance to act in time or in turn, so I'm going to make a bet. And you're going to have to deal with the situation that you've laid out for yourself. I didn't do anything wrong. You're the one that made the mistake. I'm allowed to do whatever I need to do here now. Because really, if she didn't show her hand, he was going to muck or whatever, but we don't know that. You know, she doesn't know that.
Right.
So it's not fair. One thing I want to say is I think we need to get Nick into O'Malley's home game. To get this queen guy to stop doing his showing his hands, but really, I think that what you said makes a lot of sense. That there should be repercussions for breaking the rules, no matter how innocent they are. I mean, yeah, there are times where people get away with it, just like, officer, I'm sorry that I didn't see the red light or the stop sign or whatever, and then they give him a break because it was sincere and there was no catastrophe. But in this case, the guy said, no, I'm going to be the rigid cop today who said, this is going to be your first ticket of your life.
And there should be no I guess the best way to say it is there should be no expectation of
getting off.
Escaping.
Yeah.
That's probably a better way of saying it. I mean, I'm certainly not for punishing everyone for every transgression they do, but you should not expect that you should be able to talk yourself out of something. So let me ask you one more question on this. As Nick mentioned in here, this was a relatively low risk move for him because the woman bet, how do you describe it? He said a decent sized bet. Okay. I'm sorry. I guess we don't know exactly what it was,
yeah,
but if she had made a smaller bet, then there's a little risk here, right? Because it's not worth her, you know, trying to fight with you for, you know, whatever limited amount of chips she put in. I think the real peril comes here is if she makes a huge bet and that almost pot commits her. That's a tough situation at that point, because then, you know, what does she do at that point? If she feels like you have a king, is she really going to commit the rest of her chips knowing that she's way behind and has to catch up? Or is she going to say, you know what, I got a lot of my chips in, I feel like I'm pot committed even if I'm behind, and it makes it easier for her to call?
Well, the first thing I would say, I would ask her if she's related to Scott Long. Because then I'll know if she can fold.
Because she knows she's going to fold?
Yeah, because Scott can fold no matter how many chips he has left. So if she says, yeah, Scott's my nephew, and okay, well then I raise. But if I never heard of Scott Long and we're not related, you made a good point there. She may say, I can't fold. I have too much money in the middle, and you could be bluffing, and the likelihood is there's a percentage here and blah, 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 and so I'm going to call, and then you're in trouble. Now you have to make some sort of miracle.
I mean, it's a fascinating situation at that point, because it's one of these weird things where it makes more sense for you to make this move if the more money she's bet, right? Because you're getting a bigger return on your dollar, right?
Yeah, I know what you're going to say.
But so there's also a bigger risk doing that, because it's less likely you're going to get away with it.
Yeah.
High risk, high return situation. You don't get a ton of those, I don't think. And that's exactly what it is. I think initially you think of it, awesome, I got her cornered here, and oh my gosh, she put a lot of money in. This is like Christmas in July, and then she's like, you know what, I don't care.
Yeah.
And be honest, you know how some people are, too. They get so tilted at the table, right? I can imagine this situation tilting somebody. Think, oh, my gosh, this is ridiculous. Oh, your angle shooting by taking advantage of me. You know what? I don't care. I'm done. I'm putting my chips in. And then imagine their shock when you turn over your crap and it holds up and they double up on making this stupid mistake. So, yeah, there's a lot of risk in this play, to be honest.
Yeah, there is a lot of risk. And it was the return worth it. That's the thing. I mean, I guess it was because he won, but, you know, we don't have specifics there, so we don't know what the actual chip stacks were. We don't, you know, whatever. So it's really difficult. But he took all that into consideration, and he made this play, and I thought it was a good play. And I think he had every right to do it. There, I can't imagine a scenario where he was wrong here,
right.
or somebody saying he was wrong, because it's within the rules. It is not my problem that she showed her jacks, and I'm putting the – and it's no limit hold'em. And that's the game, is to put people to decisions for their chips and to play the person, and that's what he did. So, you know, bravo, and I'm not just saying that because you love our show and you love our Antioch Poker Tour at Thunder Mountain.
Well, thanks, Nick. Oh, I hope you keep on listening, and we'll be out back at the Thunder Valley this November, so I hope to see you then.
If anybody has any ability to move weather, I would appreciate it if you could tell Dorian to go north. But we're going to have some really good times down at the Dominican Republic, and can't wait for our World Championship, and we can't wait to talk to you guys sometime next week. Don't forget, the show is going to be posted to our website sometime between Thursday and Friday, but it won't be posted to our feed until sometime Monday. So I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.